little better. Some people are getting in the habit of showing up at 8 and not waiting until 9 o'clock. Now let's see if those at home. I want to continue the teaching tonight on the world, the flesh, and the devil. But as I've said, I want you back in the habit of calling. So, how about now? Get on the telephone. Pretty good. We're not good enough. You wonder why they're coming to me when the music plays. They're having a little problem with the camera, and they're trying to register the camera. Really, I'm not having a hankering for you to see my face. You see it 24 hours a day. But the camera, you that were watching, obviously could tell the other camera wasn't right. And this one's got a tube problem, or you wouldn't have a flame making a streak. But this one's better. And we changed cameras, and we're trying to register the camera. So I'm really not giving you a lesson on how to light a pipe. Now you know. So don't bother to look. We'll take care of it. You get on the telephone. I want to start teaching by 9 o'clock. I ask for those that would take a step of faith this year and go beyond first fruits, which is the Lord's and is required, and many of you did that in the first week of the year. But ask how many would go 3 consecutive months and add a burnt offering of first fruits for February and March also. Many of you are doing that. God will keep His word and honor you for that. And some of you didn't participate in first fruits at all. Well, you can still do it by participating in this first week of March. Now, you that have made that commitment, recommit and let me know you're going to do it this week. I'm not happy with the reservations in the cathedral. I really wasn't happy with the crowd Sunday. I winked at it because I'd been gone for 3 Sundays. 4, I think, all total, but at least 3. Now I'm back. This is the second Sunday I'm back. I expect you in the cathedral Sunday. That's your testimony. Soldiers of faith in their position. And don't just come. Call and tell me you're coming and make your reservation. And it's, as always, the first week of any month, the time to make your commitments for the month. So we have plenty to do in the next 12 minutes. Then I can start teaching right after 9 o'clock. So get on the telephone. What you're looking at, for you who have TV, is the raising of the new tower with the old FM antenna on it, the old 99.5 FM, now 100.1, out of Anguilla. I think you'll enjoy seeing that. I thought this had all been done before I got to Anguilla, but it's done now. You watch it go up. They took the towers down, as you know. You watched them when they took the big curtain antennas down that we purchased from Far East Broadcasting. And they'll erect those towers somewhere. I've chosen not to tell you yet. We've got to get this one done. But Stormy is something else. And the best in the business. He trained Sam and the rest of the crew. And we're in good hands when Stormy's designing and installing and planning and directing the raising of those towers. 9 o'clock, a little after. I want to start teaching after one song. But I want you all to welcome Ron and Mary Ellen St. Armand from St. George, Ontario, Canada. I want you to know I don't miss the calls you make. And the faithfulness that you exhibit. When I speak of the core group that we can always count on, they're part of it. They've been here for a couple of weeks, and we'll be here at least through Sunday. You're welcome. Nice to see you and be able to put a face in front of the camera. Get it on them when you hear me talk about Ontario, Canada. Our family. Our family of faith is starting to cover the world. And that's what's bothering Satan and his chief henchman, the Cosmocratoros. Believe me, as much as I praise my staff on Sunday, they have had a week now to learn the difference between being here when I'm not here and when I'm here. And that's not me. It's because the primary target of Satan is me. And as we've been teaching, Satan's not omnipresent and not omnipotent. And wherever I go, that means that's where the heaviest attack will come. Oh, he's always busy attacking all of you in here. But believe you me, they know that the battle is far different when all of those that followed me to Anguilla are now back here doing the work. I want you to keep praying for Tony Oshie. He's doing remarkably well. You pray that God will continue to add his healing to what the chemotherapy and the doctors are doing. And I'm telling you again, the worst attack that's ever come against me has been underway for some weeks. Pray for me. One more song and I start teaching. For three nights now, I've been reading from G. Campbell Morgan's series of messages called The Westminster Pulpit, publications of his sermons preached from that pulpit. I can only hope that in the years to come, the University Cathedral pulpit will bring direction and blessing and guidance to people in years to come, should Jesus tarry, as the Westminster pulpit, G. Campbell Morgan's preachings, have done over the years. It's an honor to know that every time you look at those Jesus Save signs, G. Campbell Morgan preached under those signs. And I cannot ever resist pointing out, stubbed out his cigar in a flower pot on the way to the pulpit as he preached under those signs. His entire career was not limited to the Westminster Cathedral in London, but he preached under these Jesus Save signs in downtown Los Angeles, as did just about every great preacher of the last generation. His series was entitled The Problems of the Religious Life, The Opposing Forces of the Religious Life, The World, The Flesh, and The Devil. He discussed the world in terms of temporal and spatial terms, and quite rightly pointed out that God surveyed his creation and said it's good. The world was not inherently evil, or intrinsically so. It's when it becomes the end of our behavior and activity, consumes us, becomes an end in itself, instead of being created for the purpose that God had, to be in a dominion of a God-ordered, God-ordained man. He didn't have much to say about the worldliness quality, the cosmos that Jesus talked about, which is the frame of reference of those who are consumed with the world, have no eternal perspective and no spiritual perspective. He also didn't talk of the fact that after God surveyed his creation and said it's good. Put man in control of it. And it was to be under Adam's dominion. That when Satan entered into the garden, and inspired rebellion, not only were Adam and Eve cursed, but the earth was cursed. You read in Romans 8 that creation sighs and groans for the day of deliverance. I pointed out before that the sounds of nature are in a minor key. If you've ever listened to the transitions from a minor key to a major key, they always leave you wanting something more. When you end with that minor key note, it has a plaintive quality to it. Let's listen to it. See if this old piano is still in tune. I don't think anybody's touched it in years. There's your major note. There's your minor. And you're just not satisfied with that sound until it goes into the major note. All nature's in this plaintive. The sounds of the wind, the sounds of birds, the sounds of a stream rippling over rocks. Many have speculated that when Paul talked of the nature groaning and waiting for its deliverance, that when God recreates again, and maybe even in the millennium, the sounds of nature will modulate from the minor to the major key. He put a curse and made Satan the prince of the power of the air. And what was intended to be Adam's domain became Satan's turf. And he will use all the allurements of the world to hold us as his prisoner. Then Morgan talked to the flesh. And again, the same message. Flesh is not inherently evil. Flesh is not all bad. You don't get saved by carving the flesh out of your system. It's just corrupt according to deceiving desires. Because there's Satan who uses the world to further his purpose, to make flesh the master instead of the servant. Evolution is a hypothesis, but if true, it produced flesh. Flesh other than Adam. But God created Adam from the dust of the earth, and that flesh that breathed into him. Man became a living soul in the spiritual dimension. Became a reality. I get very suspicious of these preachers who try to divide man up into that which is soul, that which is flesh, and that which is spirit. I went down that route intending to do my doctorate before I did my PhD at Stanford on Reinhold Niebuhr's theology. I set out first thinking I could put together a doctoral dissertation on St. Paul's use of the word sarx for flesh and pneuma and the other words that he uses describing man, body, soul, spirit. Not possible. I had to abandon the doctoral dissertation because Paul did not divide man up into tight structural units. Reinhold Niebuhr understood the best that man is a complicated combination of foci. The rationalists were wrong because they deified reason. The hedonists are wrong because they deify the pleasures of the flesh. And it took him several years fact, he wrote 30-some books and over 1,000 magazine articles before he encountered Martin Buber, the Hebrew theologian, studies on the I-Thou relationship between man and God. And he came to the semantical tools to finally express at his best, even beyond his early studies in the nature and destiny of man, in the book The Self and the Dramas of History, he came finally to the verbal frame to express the biblical concept that the essential man, the spirit of man, and as we borrowed from G. Campbell Morgan last night, write it with a small s. I do this with faith. Pistis, the New Testament Greek word for faith, and the two words in the Old Testament are all action words. And faith is action based on belief sustained by confidence. Until God in His Word, at the fullness of time, when the Greek language ruled, seized that word and made it His. No man could be without faith. The only thing you had a choice about was your object. You couldn't live, move, and breathe, and act without faithing because you acted based upon some belief sustained by confidence. You do that when you expect your feet to hit the ground because of faith in gravity, whether you understand it in all of its total mass relationships doesn't matter. You have faith that when you get out of a chair, your feet will go to the ground, not the ceiling. Faith, in the abstract meaning of the word, could have any object. The only thing you could choose was the object. And there was always required a faither who was faithing, and there had to be an object of the faith, and the result was the faith. And we should have made, in the English language, a new word, faithing, to translate pisteo, the New Testament Greek word. We didn't. We took belief, which is only a part of faith. And using only that part, we've distorted the meaning of the word faith. Man has to hang his body on something. And what God did by choosing that word to demonstrate what He was seeking among men, He took the word faith and put a capital letter on it when it was expressed in relationship to the object, God's word and God's faithfulness to it. You can have faith in a lot of objects. You can have faith in faith. And that's what a lot of these faith preachers are preaching. And they're right. Faith works. That explains the Christian Science doctrines. That explains faith as it works in many other frames than the Christian frame. Faith is built as an operational principle into the universe. That's why all these self-help operations work. That's faith in faith. And it's faith in your faith you can talk about. And most faith is used for you. Saving faith. Faith with a capital letter on it is faith that focuses on the object of God's word of promise and God's faithfulness to carry it out. You have the belief that when God says something, He'll do it. You hang your body on it in action, and you keep hanging there because of a confidence that when God says it, forever it's settled in heaven, it will happen. So there's faith that can be in bad objects, good objects. That's faith is a small letter. That's human. It has nothing to do with God's gift and the Spirit's response to it. Saving faith, capital letters, is when that action of faith is focused on God's Word. Likewise here, we're talking about the essential self. Small s, that spiritual side of man. And the uniqueness of man, as Niebuhr says, we're a citizen of time and eternity. We're tethered to this house of flesh. But we have the ability to transcend it. And that spirit side of man can only find its destiny by giving itself to God and His purposes. And it cannot be fulfilled until it finds a center around which it must rotate. Sensuality, the lowest form of sin, is to make the self a servant of the flesh. Some urge, a dope addict, a sexual pervert, sensual pleasure becomes the master of the self destined to to reign and rule throughout eternity. That's the flesh. And Satan, as he uses the world to keep us captive from God's calling, will use the flesh to do the same. The spirit, as we saw last night, the spirit, man's spirit, small s, is eager. The spirit of man is what's being talked about in Romans 7. What I want, I know what the good is, and I want to do it. Eager to do it. But what I would, I find myself not doing, and what I would not do, I find myself doing. I then see there's another law written into my members, sin, that takes me into captivity. The flesh becoming the master makes the same action sin, because the self is destined to be glued to God. Niebuhr pointed out how reason and rationalism was wrong. Niebuhr came out of the idealistic liberal faith of the generation before the First World War and the Industrial Revolution. His graduation speech when he graduated from seminary was straight out of liberal theology. Sin is ignorance and salvation is education. Man is basically good, and with education he'll do what's right. He built a small congregation from 100 to 1,000 and more in the city of Detroit as Henry Ford was using his $5 an hour to make men slaves to machines. And he saw the most educated nation, the nation of his heritage, Germany, become the most evil nation. And he and Karl Barth and Emil Brunner and Paul Tillich, the leading neo-Orthodox theologians, had their faith shattered and went back to the Bible. That's why it's called neo-orthodoxy. And he analyzed more than anyone the errors of history that failed to recognize that reason is not basically good, nor is it bad, but a corrupted self, a self-serving spirit of man, can make reason the tool of its sin to rationalize and to justify its own self-serving identity with the world or with the flesh. The self needs to be talked to and added to by God. And when the light of the Word comes and faith in God is turned loose, the Spirit of God comes in us and it adheres to the Spirit of man, Spirit of God in capital letters. And when that Spirit is there, there is a war between that Spirit and the flesh, which wants its way. Now, flesh can cause you to sin, so fall short. The spirit can be eager, the flesh weak. As Peter, who protested his allegiance and that he'd die for the Lord and can't even pray and watch 1 hour. It becomes evil when the evil spirits that we wrestle against, the elements of this world, come and clone the flesh and drag the spirit down and embed it in this flesh that will die. The spirit is destined to a new life in eternity. And it's the devil using the world and the flesh that turns both evil. It is against this enemy, the devil. Now I'm back to finish the message, which I stopped before I got to this point, that G. Campbell Morgan preached on the devil. It's against this enemy that we have to fight. Now, if you want me to continue, get on telephone. Satan is the subject, the devil. G. Campbell Morgan's Westminster pulpit in his series, The World, the Flesh, and the Devil. It's against this enemy, Satan, that we have to fight. That leads me to a brief word on the devil in relation to the world and the flesh. These, the world and the flesh, are the media through which he, the devil, acts. These, the world and the flesh, are the media in which he hides. You can find only one great occasion in all human history when the devil came out in the open. Now think about this. Only one great occasion in all human history when the devil came out into the open. I bet a lot of you never thought of that. We expect the devil to be flaunting himself at every opportunity. Remember Screwtape Letters, C.S. Lewis? The young demon that was a trainee that Screwtape wrote a letter to because he wanted credit. Screwtape took him to task. There had never been a greater opportunity for Satan than now because nobody believes in him. You want to be a burglar or a thief? You want to send a siren ahead of you to announce your presence? A rapist going to hire a flashing searchlight? You can find only one great occasion in all human history when the devil came out into the open. That was when in the wilderness he met Jesus Christ. Couldn't fool him, so you might as well just be bombs out to the wall. He was not in the open in the Garden of Eden, in spite of what people think. God identified him. And at that point, the serpent was the most beautiful creature in all creation. And Satan came in that disguise. He didn't come in the open. He's identified by God as to who he really was. But he didn't come out in the open. He came in disguise. And then when he got Eve, he came disguised as Eve. You don't think Satan was in Eve when she got Adam? What's the matter with you?
This is the end of side one. For the rest of the teaching, please turn the tape over for side two.